In today's episode, we unpack the perfect church visitor follow-up process and what your church needs to do to implement it. We hope this podcast helps your church reach more people and grow. This is the Reach Right Podcast. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping pastors and church leaders reach people the right way. Hosted by me, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host, Ian Hyatt. We're here to help your church see more visitors and grow. Well, hey guys, welcome to the Reach Right Podcast, episode number 47. I am your host, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host,
Ian Hyatt. What's up, Thomas?
Hey, Ian, looking forward to our conversation here today. We're going to be talking about how to build the perfect church visitor follow-up process. I think this is going to be a good conversation. Bold title, I know, that we're going to tell people how perfect. To build the perfect one.
But
man, we've done a few episodes already about assimilation processes and visitor follow-up. And so we've had these conversations that have given lots of tips on how to improve it. But I still feel like what people, what we hear a lot is in these conversations, people will tell us that their visitor follow-up process, their assimilation process is a work in progress or it's not quite there yet. And so I thought it would be helpful today just to give our idea of what the perfect process would look like, one that as a someone that's pastored a church before, and I've seen this process work and play out really well in our church, in churches that we talk to. Now, all that to say, we know it's bold. I'm sure there are other processes that are not necessarily imperfect if they don't follow this. but I think that for those of you that maybe have a thrown together or not fully built out visitor follow-up process, we hope this serves as kind of a template for you that would really work for your church.
Yeah, that's good. And I think, you know, churches have struggled with this for a while, you know, assimilation and follow up and all of that. And for a lot of different reasons. But one encouragement I've seen over the last year with the pandemic and all, the pandemic kind of forced churches to get a little bit better at this, especially with everyone going digital and capturing people's information online. So we're going to dig into that a little bit and just good strategy that's kind of come out of that whole thing too. But yeah, I think this would be very helpful. And why don't I kick us off here for the first one. First step is pretty simple. You got to first gather their information, right?
So absolutely.
You can't do anything if you don't have someone's contact information. And I know we're in this age where people are being spammed more than ever. People are using trash email addresses that they give to vendors and all of that stuff because they just were being hit with all this. And people, you know, are worried about their information out there on the internet in general or on social media and all of that. So we get that it's kind of, it can be a sensitive thing to people. But let's face it, if someone's already interested in coming to your church or they come to your church, well, we can assume that it's okay to ask them for this. So so I guess that brings kind of the first question that I know we've heard when we've made this recommendation or if we talk to churches, and that's usually kind of like, well, what kind of information should we gather? I know I hear that question when I consult with churches is, okay, what's acceptable and all of that. So your thoughts and ideas on that. I mean, the first thing we think of is, of course, name, email. Email's kind of an easy ask. Phone number, maybe. What do you think about that?
So I think to kind of back what you were saying before, and before I answer the what should we gather question, I think that this is something that I find a lot of pastors are scared of, like asking people. And I guess I get it, is that you feel like some people will tell you no and nobody likes hearing no. And so I understand that. but it's just something that you have to get over, that in order to disciple people, you need to know how to get a hold of them. Yeah. That's just the, and if your mission is to win people to Jesus and disciple them to become more like Jesus, you're going to need their contact information to do those kinds of things. So asking for that is something really important. So what should you ask for? There has been a lot of research on this, not just in the church world, but in the business world. I know because we ask people for their information, and we have on average about 25 to 30 people giving us their information every single day here at ReachRight. And there is proof that the less information you ask for, the more information you will get. The more number of people that will give it. So if you ask people for in that contact card or wherever you're having it on your website, wherever it is, at a minimum, you'll need to ask for their name. You'll need to ask for their email address. I would recommend their phone number. And I would, in most cases, ask for their address. But generally, only ask for the information that you actually plan to use. So if you're going to ask for their email, you need to be willing to email them. If you're going to ask for their phone number, you're going to be texting them at a minimum. If you're going to ask for their address, you're going to be sending them something like a card in the mail or something like that. Yep. So what you shouldn't ask for in this first form is, how did you hear about us? What did you like best about your visit with us? You shouldn't be asking for names and information on all their family members or kids. You shouldn't ask for their birthdays.
It's too much too soon.
So all that can come later, but getting those probably four pieces, name, address, phone number, mailing address, an email address. Those are the things that you need to ask for there. So,
So I've seen the phone number be optional too. That's kind of an idea. Sometimes people just make that an optional thing. But
I think really everything on these, if it's a physical card, everything is innately optional, right? Like, because they don't have to write their name. There's no, you can put it in the offering basket, whether you have your address on there or not. With these digital ones, I would encourage you to make everything optional except for the name. You need to know who you're talking to. But even email address, because people will sometimes kind of alter their communication preferences based on what is optional, what is required. But I really wouldn't ask for more than those four things on the first one. But that brings the next question is, when should we gather this information? Do you have any thoughts on that?
All the time, right?
Absolutely.
All the time. So, I mean, I think that that's just a given nowadays. Everyone's doing things on their own time, and there's so many different outlets and places where it can be gathered. And so I think that you should always be doing it, because, I mean, that's really, that doesn't mean, because you don't always have to follow up, right, at a certain time. So, but to always be gathering it is a good thing, because it's coming your way, and then you can organize a good follow-up time.
Yeah, I think that the main shift here, it's a paradigm shift, because I think 2 or 3 years ago, almost every church did they gathered information on Sunday mornings on physical cards that people would drop into the offering. And I think in my view, that seems like you will get fewer responses if you just use that method. And I think now doing it digitally online and giving people opportunities to do that before their visit, I think that is proven to be something that really is the best time to gather someone's information, because it kind of confirms their visit. If someone gets on there and they plan their visit and you do like a let us know you're coming form on your website or a pre-register your kids form on your website, so they'd give you their information before they show up. The truth is that they're going to be more likely to make that first visit. They're going to be more. What we've found is that they're stickier, is that people that do that, they're more likely to come back again. And so I think the idea behind this question of when should we gather it, I think pulling that forward as much as possible to before the first visit, that really only benefits you. So that's always a good thing to do. It lets you contact them ahead of time and do those kinds of things. So,
And if you're doing things well online now, there's you covered a few of them, like plan your visit, pre-register. Another good one is an online connection card. This is something we see more of, just for one more idea. You know, after someone watches a message online, they can fill out a card, just, you know, maybe letting you know even what they're interested in. They may have they may have a prayer need. They may want to know about how to get baptized at your church or something like that. So we just have the opportunity now, if you have a good web presence, to ask people in a lot of different ways.
Right.
So I remember in the old days on old church websites, really the only thing was like a contact us page and a prayer request right. form. But now we have so many other ways that people can initiate that and give you their info. So that's good.
Yeah. It's as if we're talking about call to action in every single conversation we ever have, Ian, as this is the, yeah. the chief
and
mistake
I'm sure
that we see.
In with that too. Yeah.
I'm sure that we will. Jokingly yeah, I'm say. Sure. Yeah. I'm sure that we will. So, yeah. Here's the last question. I think we get about gathering information, kind of the first step in the perfect visitor follow-up process is how do we get people to do that? Because yeah. what I think one of the hiccups that pastors run into is that they'll have these connection cards, they'll have an online connect card or a pre-register mm-hmm. card. And, you know, that they get a small percentage of people actually filling it out. And this is something that we measured at the last church I was pastoring. We looked really closely at these numbers and we saw about 80% of our in-person visitors would fill out a card. We saw that, well, most visitors didn't pre-register before they showed up. Again, yeah. we found those to be very sticky. But I think there's some things you can do to improve the number of people that give you their information, therefore kind of move into your assimilation process. The main thing you have to do, though, is you have to give them a reason. You have to incentivize it because people are much more guarded with their information than they ever were before.
Right.
You know, 30 years ago or 20 years ago when we were younger, Ian, you would ask someone for their information and the odds of them giving you their number. Like that was like the nervous thing that guys would have to ask girls for when we were kids. Right. Is did you get her number? Right.
That's and right. Like, yeah.
Will
yeah.
you call her as the assumption? Yeah. With that now
or,
it's
or beeper number pager
right yeah absolutely if you were really
we're dating ourselves big time
I'm not
now.
That old yeah,
yeah,
no.
yeah, yeah.
But I think that nowadays people are much more guarded with any of that information so yeah. if you don't give them a reason to give it to you, your odds of getting that information are very slim. Now it's, you know, some person might want just to talk more or has a deep need that they need to talk to a pastor about. Right. That's great. You can reach out to those people, but I think you need to give something away. So yeah. for those pre-registration or those let us know you're coming forms, it's usually you'll promise some kind of a gift when they arrive. You'll tell them that we'll help you get your kids checked in and that we'll get you a seat in the middle so you don't stick out and kind of give them some kind of a promise. For people on Sunday mornings that are filling out a card or maybe they're doing it online, you need to give them a reason too. You probably have some kind of swag or I know at our church we gave $5 coffee gift cards. This is a small price to pay for someone that could be a part of your church long term and you can help them make a decision to follow Jesus. I think it's worth it every single time if it helps us move people down that assimilation road. So anything to add to that?
Not much. No, I think you covered it. My church does, and it's starting to get hot here in the summer. My church does water bottles. So get creative, you know?
Yeah.
And what you can kind of, what people like, you know, something that they'll actually take advantage of, and it doesn't have to be expensive.
One other thing I'd say too, so a little tidbit is, I think being specific about what they get is better than being hiding it a little bit. So I hear some churches, when I listen to an online message, they'll say, you know, we have a special gift for you or something like that is what they'll say. You know what? Get up there and hold up that water bottle and say, we have this really nice water bottle. We want to give it to you and to everybody in your family. We want to give you guys one or we have a $5 gift card right here. Use some kind of a visual aid to help you with that and not just kind of the special gift mode there. So,
because they could be thinking anything they could. And when we're talking about spirituality, they could be thinking, oh, they're going to give me my get out of hell free pass or something like that. So you don't know what they're thinking. So you want to be, I agree.
Make sure it's very clear. A small copy of the Gospel of John or something like that is what they probably expect. Be concrete with it. It'll help you and you'll get more contact information. Which brings us to number two. What do we do with that contact information? You need to contact people. You need to actually do this. I want to say a couple of things about this before we get into some of the questions we hear most about it. This is probably the biggest place where people fall off in their assimilation process is they don't contact people enough, or they don't contact people at all once they have their information. Right. I know this having led and been in leadership at multiple churches, having been the guy that makes the calls or makes the emails and been the guy that has other people on our team do that, that this is something that needs to be outlined clearly. It needs to be something that you have a very clear process of how you contact all people that give you their information. And then, sad to say, it needs to be inspected and watched, because if you, I have found this many times that if you, as you give this away to a member of your team, it is easy to kind of pull back on the amount of contact or the specific plan that people have. And I say this as someone who's led sales teams before. You and I both know we were leaders in our sales teams before. Ian, like salespeople, which is different from these people, but a salesperson is someone whose job is to help someone go from someone who's looking at a company to someone who's going to make a decision to be a part of that company or be a part of that family there. And a salesperson, nobody likes getting rejected, right? And that's what happens with a lot of these contacts, is that when you call someone or you text them or you email them and you get a negative response or they don't call you back, or which is going to happen a lot with any visitor follow-up process, it's easy to take that stuff personally. It's never fun to do. And I'm going to tell you, you're not going to find someone that really likes doing this job. There might be some really weird unicorns out there that do, but they are few and far between. So I say all this is that to say that this is something that I see most often as the place where things fall down. And I often find that pastors, when they actually inspect this, they're like, you mean to tell me that we haven't been doing this system that we wrote down, that it's only been doing part way, or we're sending one email and then calling it good? You know, so you really need to look at this.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that actually leads to a good transition into one of the questions you may have under this, which is, should I email, call, text, send a card? What do I do? What would you say?
Yes, all of those things.
All of them? Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that obviously I think everybody should get emailed. So that's probably the least invasive of all of these things here. I think that a smart church, if you have an address, you'll send a physical card too. I think a handwritten card, it really carries a lot of weight. I see this being really great for kids that came to kids ministry. If you have their address, having one of your kids ministry leaders send them a card. Yeah. We used to do this and we'd put some stickers in the card too, so the kid got something in the mail and something to play with. It was super fun. Kids, we heard over and over again how blessed families were and excited the kids were to receive something like that. Text, I would say yes, almost certainly you should do that. Because I think text, I think 5 years ago, if you asked me that question, I would say, no, don't do that. That's kind of too private or invasive. I only text with people that I know usually.
Right.
But I think that world has changed. So a text would be appropriate. These have to be, don't do a long, you know, 200 word text or something, or a long string of texts.
Plan but of I think, salvation right in the text. Right. Yeah.
I think a couple of, a text is, hey, it was great having you on Sunday. I hope you can make it back next week too, and we can connect a little bit more. That's a great text to send. The big question is the phone call though, right?
Right.
Well, we did leave off one that was old school that I would probably recommend against, which is the in-person visit. So that one, I don't know. You know, I would probably dissuade most churches. Maybe if you're in a really rural community or something, it might make sense. But in most urban settings, I'd say probably not.
Be afraid to show up at some people's doors these days. Better have some real faith for that.
Absolutely. So, but the phone call question, that's the big one though, Ian. The phone call question. You have a thought on that?
I do. You know, again, I know we're getting spam calls daily now, and I know that is maybe looked at as the more intrusive way to do it. But I think some people still really respond. Like when we say do all of these things, different people respond to these different communication methods, you know, in different ways, in different levels. So I think it's still makes sense to give a phone call. It's a little more personal.
Absolutely.
You get to actually kind of insert your personality and have a kind tone, and they get to hear that you genuinely, you know, want to see them again. And so I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I think there's an age difference here where, mm-hmm. I think Gen Xers and boomers, they will appreciate the phone call. Millennials, a little less, and certainly Gen Z, they'd probably be, who on earth is calling me that I don't know? And they probably won't answer anyway. So you'll be fine.
Right.
I think that my rule of thumb is, when in doubt, err on the side of contacting more as opposed to contacting less. So I think that while there's the off chance that someone might feel like it's a little bit weird, they're not really going to be offended that you called. And if it's a chance to make a connection, I would certainly err on that side of making a connection with somebody there.
That's good.
Yeah. How often do you think we should reach out to people though?
Yeah. How often?
Yeah. How often should, we have all these contact methods. Should we just, I don't know, you tell me, I have some thoughts on this, but often should people reach out?
Well, and we don't want to barrage people constantly or every day or anything like that. And I think with some of these different methods, text and email, you could maybe email a little bit more than texting someone every day. You can, I wouldn't recommend calling someone every day or anything like that. So for sure. So I think in my mind, and I know you'll have some thoughts, you probably email you send out, of course, a card once, but you email a little bit more. Text would be the next one that you do. And then phone would be probably the least that you do. How often? Maybe you have a better idea of that, but I think that's kind of the order.
Yeah. If I had to say, we're giving them the perfect plan, right? So again, they can disagree with this. So here's the perfect plan is, I'd say probably 3 emails, in the first week. One call, one text, one card. That's what I would say. So that's 5 points of contact in the first week. So the first email probably comes Sunday afternoon. It says, hey, it was so great to have you. I'm sorry I didn't get to meet you. And I really hope we get to meet you again next week. There's probably some kind of a midweek email that says something to the effect of, here's something that's happening this week. Here's an event that's coming up. And then there's probably a late week email that, hey, the sermon topic for this weekend is this. I hope you can come out because it's really going to build on the last sermon. That's the extent of that. So 3 emails, 1 call, 1 text, 1 card that goes out there. That would diminish over time. I think it is okay to email them again after, if they don't come back that second Sunday, it's okay and appropriate to send them an email and say, hey, it was really great to meet you last week. I was hoping to catch you again this week, but I guess you guys couldn't make it. That's okay too. But just wanted to see if there's anything I could be praying for you about, something to that effect. That would all be really good. So again, that might seem like it's crazy to some of our audience here that 5 points of contact in the first week. Yeah. And then after following weeks, you're going to probably wind up contacting someone 7, 8, 9 times with all the emails and things that are in there. That may seem crazy to people, but I will tell you that this is the way that you will better build connections with people and help people make that step of connecting with your church. And then that leads to the question of who should reach out. I'll kind of take a stab at that here too, and you can chime in with any other things you think. I think that at some point in the process, it's important that the lead pastor of the church is the name that's on some of this communication.
Right.
So that doesn't mean that you have to be actually the one doing it. I know.
Right.
I'm sure at your church, your lead pastor probably has his name on stuff, but he's not the one that's typing these things out or handwriting some of these cards, I wouldn't think, at a church your size, right?
No, so, not at all.
I think that having people help you with this is good, but I think some or most or maybe even all, if you can, of the communication coming from the lead pastor of the church, it really just carries more weight. What do you have to add?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, there's been study after study, and, you know, most pastors are very humble and they know it's not all about them, but there's been study after study that you know, 80 some odd percent of people that join a church or become a member, it's the number one reason was kind of the connection they felt with the pastor. I mean, they right. heard you preach, right? Unless you had a guest speaker or something, but they heard you preach. You're kind of the face of the church. And again, I think that's who you definitely opt to. So yeah, I agree.
Yep. Yep. I think that's exactly right. So, and then I guess that brings us to the last one, is what should we ask them to do? And this is another thing again,
another call to action.
Every step here, you'll notice we have to get them to do something.
That's it.
So the next step is that we need to, in this communication, you should be in giving them an invitation to do something next, to ask. You're reaching out, you're asking them to do something. So the first couple of contacts is probably going to be come back next Sunday. That's what the call to action is for them. But at some point, you're going to actually introduce the third step in our assimilation process that we think is the perfect one here.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and introduce that. So you ask them to do this, but number three is host a meet and greet, host some kind of a place where the people that are visiting your church or new to your church can connect with leaders within your church. You can call this pizza with the pastors or coffee with clergy or whatever other thing you want to call it. But having some kind of a informal, casual type gathering that's primary purpose is to make a connection, put a face with a name, shake hands, share a little bit of a dialogue with people. This is the main thing. This is not a history of the church class. This is not a exhaustive what we believe class. It's not a membership class.
Don't call it membership. That's exactly what I was about to say.
That's it.
A little too formal at that point.
So who should attend? So obviously visitors should attend this class. But I think that for most cases, this is going to be all of your church leadership, whether paid or unpaid, if they're clergy or not, or if they're licensed pastors or volunteers or whatever it would be. I think anybody that would probably have an interaction with visitors. So this will be youth and children's people, anybody that will potentially be on the stage on a Sunday. Yeah. So associate pastors, pastors, worship leader, anybody, they'd be valuable to you to help. All of these people would be good for visitors and guests to meet and great to build relationship with. So I think these are the kind of people that should be there.
Yeah, agreed. And again, the faces, the people that they're going to most likely see up on stage or have some sort of direct ministry contact with. So that that totally makes sense.
Yep, that's right.
So out of that, so other than the who, it's should we feed people? you know, I don't know. I think, you know, I still love a good church potluck, right? Those have been around forever, right? You have a church pot. We've always loved food within church. Yeah. And I think that even if it's someone who hasn't had a church background, food seems to relax people. It's always appealing. And especially if you're doing this maybe after Sunday, people are going to be hungry. Yeah. They're already thinking about lunch. And if it's a free lunch or whatever you're doing, that's great. But I think that food definitely is good. I do remember my church making probably what they would consider a mistake one time. It was just, we'll have light refreshments.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, okay, that's nice. But I think if you could say pizza or you could say something to that effect, sandwiches, whatever you do, that's going to definitely you're going to have a little bit more of a response.
Yeah. We probably should have said this. I think the right time to have this and the perfect process is to have it after church. If you're a Sunday worshiping church, after church on Sunday.
Right.
If you have other service times where visitors come, that's, you know, plan accordingly. But I think for the typical church, that's a 10 a.m. on Sunday service, you get out around 11:30 or so, and you guys can have a meeting then. That's the right time to do it. But everybody's hungry, so you don't want people trying to ghost out of there as soon as they possibly can, because they're starving. So the the answer to the should we feed people question, absolutely, you should feed people. I would encourage, it's probably worth every penny to feed them a meal. And there's some cost involved with that. I get that. But I think that there is something about the connection that happens with people when they are sharing a meal together that they're actually eating, that it's just better for building relationships with people. So I think that that is money well spent if you do that. It's a biblical principle to feed people. I would say probably not a potluck. You mentioned potlucks before. I know you weren't implying that we should do potlucks.
No, but not a potluck.
Don't ask your visitors to bring the food.
Don't ask them to cook something ahead of time. No, I'm not doing that. We're not going to this church. So I just meant the church potluck had been around, but well, good.
Absolutely.
So once the food's there, you might be asking, well, okay, what do you talk about at this? You already kind of touched on this. It's informal. Wouldn't dig deep into church history and beliefs and or if you're denominationally affiliated, digging deep into all of that stuff. I think that this is, you keep it lighthearted. I think you definitely talk about what you love about the church, some of the values. Maybe get some people in there that could share a testimony or a story of how, you know, God impacted them at your church. You know, those types of things are really good at something informal and for someone who's new.
Yep, that's exactly right, Ian. So you don't get too deep into the theology and what it means to be a member of the church. It's not an invitation to that. But yes, I think the main thing is it's stories. This is where you tell stories, whether they are spiritual testimonies or the pastor of the church usually will share a little bit about how they wound up to be the pastors. If you planted the church, you know, talk about that. But we're not getting deep into that. It might be really like a really brief version. Any story should be less than a minute or two. So any testimonies, I think just really honing that in. But I would plan a few testimonies. Maybe there are staff members that have testimonies. But even better is if someone can see someone, they're coming to this meet and greet, and they hear from someone that is that was in their shoes 1 year ago, and they can tell a story of, you know, we came to this and we got involved here at Trinity Church. And when we came, our marriage was a wreck and we were in a really dark place and we were talking about the D word and we were really struggling. And then God came in and through some of the things and the marriage class that we did here at this church, we had this experience. So having that of a story, it reinforces what the discipleship path that this is all about. It really reinforces that for people there. So I think that's really what would be valuable. So, and that actually, you know, since we're not talking about some of the deeper stuff, that leads us to the fourth question is what should we invite them to do next, the next step in the process? And that is inviting them to a partnership class of some kind. So the reason why you're not talking about membership or whatever you call it there is because you have an additional class or maybe set of classes that get deep into the partnership or membership part of the church there. So that's the fourth item in the perfect assimilation process is host a partnership class. So when should these take place? These should be the meet and greets are going to be more often. We'll have the meet and greets. You could probably host them if you're a large enough church. Hosting them weekly makes sense. So having something where every visitor from the last week or anybody who wants to come, and you might get 10 or 20 people there. With this partnership type thing, you probably need a little bit more mass because it's not fun to do a partnership class where you're the only person there that's becoming a member of the church and you have like 11 other people that are made a meal just for you. And it's a little bit,
you might feel spoiled, but a little awkward.
It would be probably a little bit off-putting for something like that. So these should probably, these take place, they have to be at a minimum quarterly, right? So even if you, you know, you need to have enough visitor flow that you can put these out quarterly. I think would be better if you could pull them off monthly. That would be fantastic. I would not want less than probably 6 or 7 people in a meeting like this. I wouldn't want more than 15 or 20 people in a meeting like this because you want chances for people to connect there. So anyway, that's kind of when they should be happening. I use the term partnership. I don't know what you think about. Maybe you could add, Ian. That's what this is kind of a church preference thing, but membership carries some weight with it that it maybe does. You don't want. So what do you think?
And that term's been around for a while, you know, membership and it's kind of funny. It reminds me where we still recommend this, but we used to more often, we don't put like a members only link on your website. When we talk about website, it just makes it feel like too deep and secret society. So I think partnership's a good term. I've heard other ones before. I'm kind of drawing a blank, but, and I think a lot of it maybe just depends on your people, your church culture, a little bit. So I think that, you know, each church can kind of brainstorm those things. A partnership class is a new term I do see a lot.
I know that we did both. Like, so I was we used the term membership at our church, and then we switched to partnership and a lot more people came because it was, we had a different name for it. It was called our starting point class is what starting we called point. It.
Yeah. That's what we call ours.
But we called it it was partnership is what we invited people to. The point of the class was to invite them, you know, kind of the next step is to become a partner with our church and not a member of our church, because membership felt more passive, I feel like, and partnership feels more like I'm a part of it. We found that we got some good results from that. So,
that's good.
But what are some of the things that need to get communicated in that class? What do we talk about in this one, would you say, Ian? What do people need to know?
This is where you can go a little bit deeper. I mean, because I think they're at this point where they're, for lack of a better word, bought in on your church a little bit. And I think that, this is where your beliefs and kind of where you can talk about different opportunities of service, where they can put their gifts, talk a little bit about helping them find their spiritual gifts, talk a little bit about small groups. Small groups, of course, that's always a good way to get someone deeper connected. Everyone knows that. So this is where you can go a little bit deeper with those things that we said that you don't want to do at the meet and greet. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think this is a spot where what we like to do at these partnership or our starting point classes, I find that it's great to bring up some of those tricky theological questions and be able to give them the information in the right kind of a setting and paint the right picture. So for instance, like we were a church, we were part of a four square denomination. So we were a four square church. The background is we ordained women and we are on the spirit filled side of the charismatic versus, more traditional conservative type spectrum there. And so we would talk a little bit there about how we don't hate churches that don't ordain women, but at our church, we will have women that share the message at times. And this is why we do it. And here's some scriptures that back that up. And we talk about those things. And, we're also a spirit filled church. That's why you'll see some people raising their hands in times of worship. And this is why we do that. And so it let us kind of answer some of those objections that people might already be concerned about. Kind of paint those things in a good light there. So it was good for us to do those kinds of things. But I think the main crux of this partnership class is to, number one, kind of help people become a partner with your church. But you really need to define what that means.
Yeah.
What does a fully committed member of a church look like? And the right answer to that is going to vary a little bit from church to church. But in general, it's these few things. They're involved in some, they come on Sundays. They're involved in some kind of a outside of Sunday discipleship. So usually that's a small groups, or maybe for your church, it's Sunday school or a Wednesday night service or something. But usually it's some kind of a small discipleship group. They have a place of service. So they have some place that they're giving back, and then they're giving. Those are usually the four things that most churches are asking people to do to become a partner. And you need to spell that out for people and help people see that this is what is expected. This is what our partners do. If you want to be a part of this movement that we have here, this is what that would look like. And this is what we're going to ask you to do. Again, this is another place that I think a lot of times the call to action thing, that's something that scares people a little bit to do it because there's a chance of rejection, right? When you ask someone, will you give, there's a chance that they could say no. Or if you say, would you serve, they could say no to something like that. And nobody likes being told no. And so sometimes this is where we fall down on things, but have the courage to know that that's what you should be doing and asking people to respond. What do you have to add, Ian?
Well, here's the thing. They're going to end up hearing that eventually anyway. If those are things that you know, a partner or a member at your church are doing, it's going to come out in a message. It's going to come from someone else. So if you're doing it up front, I think that's a good thing. The expectations, if you will, have been laid out. I think most people appreciate that, hearing that instead of being surprised later by something. So I think that maybe can put some pastors at ease or encourage them. We know it takes a little bit of boldness, but do it tactfully. You know, not forcefully, but I think identifying that up front, it's gonna bring you healthy. It's gonna bring you the people that you want at your church too, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing to take away there as well.
One of the things that's freeing, I find, and we see this in the way Jesus even presented his message, is that he talked about how the cost was great, right? So he was very upfront. He didn't sugarcoat it and say, you get all these great things and it doesn't cost you anything. The way that he delivered the gospel is that, you know, he told people to count the cost before you say you're going to do this. Like, really look at what it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
And I think I've found in really any kind of convincing or persuasion that I've done in my life. So we do this in our business all the time. And I've done this as a pastor. We give persuasive messages, any kind of persuasion, making sure that you don't just pretend there's no cost to this. Don't just minimize that and say, you know, it's going to be super easy. And don't pretend that it's somehow like that there's only one right answer to this either. There may be people that aren't ready to be partners with you just yet. And you need to give them permission to say, to pray about it more, to think about it, to try, to do whatever they need to do.
Yeah.
But giving people the opportunity doesn't mean forcing them or cornering them into the opportunity. I would say something like, hey, in this partnership class, I usually would say, hey, this may not be for everybody here yet. And if you're not there yet, that is totally okay. I hope I love this church. So I hope you do get there, because we want more partners and we want you to be a part of it. But if that's not you yet, I affirm that, and that's totally okay to be there. But if you are there and you want to be a partner with us, I want to invite you to do that, to make that commitment formal. We would have someone kind of sign up on a form there when they would do that if they wanted to partner with us. And we just felt that was a good culture. But don't feel like you need to corner people in this. Give them the opportunity to do whatever they feel called to do. We're not here to manipulate or compel people. We want to encourage them towards a relationship with Jesus.
That's good. That's good.
Yep. That's good. So that's the process. That's it. Four simple steps. You need to follow up with them after that and help them get into places of service and small groups and those things. We assume that you have systems in place for that already. But this is what we would encourage every single church to build something like or close to something like this here. I know that it seems like a daunting task, but really, it's not that much that we've added here. Sure, there's time to create curriculum for a partnership class if you don't have one. I imagine most churches have something already in that realm there. You know, writing these emails and the communication and formalizing that system of contact, all that stuff, it shouldn't take you months and months to do. It's something that if you put your head down and worked on it for a day, you could get these kinds of things implemented. Yeah. I know churches move slowly and that's how that goes sometimes, but I just want to encourage you that visitors are a gift from God. It breaks my heart to see it when we squander our gifts from God. Every time someone gives you their contact info, they come into your building. If we're not using that to its full potential, we're squandering the gifts that God has given us. He has lots to say about that in the parable of the talents and what he does with those that are responsible with his gifts. And what he does with those that aren't responsible with it. We won't go there right now, but it's something that I think, take it seriously. I hope this has been an encouragement to you. Folks, if it has been an encouragement to you, I just want to thank you guys for being part of our Reach Right family. You guys tuning in every week, it means a lot to us. If that is something that you do, please rate, review, subscribe. You can subscribe and hit the notifications button so that you'll get notified every Friday if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, or every Thursday if you're doing this on the audio format here. So we just want to thank you guys so much for being part of our Reach Right family, for kind of partnering with us and all of this. It means the world to us, and we just want to thank you. So until next week, we'll catch you then.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening to the Reach Right podcast. We hope this episode will help you reach people the right way. Looking for more resources for your church? Check us out online at reachrightstudios.com. If this episode has been helpful to you, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.